Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, January 5th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford and voice-activated Sync with My Ford Touch. Make calls, play music, and more with Sync with My Ford Touch. Available exclusively on Ford and Lincoln vehicles. For more information and online demos, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. And by MailRoute.info. MailRoute is a secure hosted service that provides enterprise-grade virus and spam filtering to companies of any size. Try it right now absolutely free at MailRoute.info. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt, and I am live at the Consumer Electronics Show. It's right there. They're putting it together. You're going to hear lots of construction noises in the background. Jason Howell is winging his way down here, so Jammer B sitting in on the controls back there. Thank you, Jammer B. And they're building the TWiT stage around me, so you may hear some noise there. But joining me is Ayaz Akhtar from PCMag.com. Welcome, Ayaz.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
It's good to see you. And also joining me is Randall Bennett of Randall Bennett.
Of awesomeness, right?
So, yeah. How's it going? I never know.
Doing good. How are you guys?
Ever since you stopped doing the regular media thing and now you actually have a real job.
I know.
I don't know how to introduce you anymore.
For now. We'll see. I don't know.
But hey, Randall, it's great to have you back. We have a ton of news, as you imagine. It's press day at CES. The show actually starts on Thursday. That's when they open the doors and everybody comes in and the actual business of the trade show begins. But on Wednesday, they have press day. There was CES unveiled last night, so things actually got started on Tuesday. And all day today were press conferences. NVIDIA made a big splash with their press conference announcing Project Denver, which is an ARM-designed CPU. They are cooperating with ARM to create a central processing unit.
If you will.
Not a graphical processing unit. If they will. So Project Denver is NVIDIA going up against Intel head-to-head.
That seems crazy. I mean, Intel, they have all the integrated graphics on their Sandy Bridge stuff that's coming out. AMD's got integrated graphics. And so why wouldn't a graphics company just go after the CPU market? I mean, this seems like it's going to be pretty cool, especially with some of the other news we've heard today.
This is really big for not just, you know, NVIDIA, but also consumers. This is huge. You know, the fact that finally there's going to be a choice between architectures, it means a lot more competition. Intel's going to have to step up its game, as well as AMD for that matter. But, you know, if we see a desktop running ARM, there's a lot of other questions, like how do developers develop for it? I mean, are there questions with, you know, how does Windows 7 run on it? All these different questions will sort of have to be figured out over the next little while. But in traditional CES fashion, I'm extremely hyped up about this announcement.
Yeah, I think it's great for the business. The idea of having another, even if it's an ARM, you know, it's a mobile focused processor for more competition is fantastic. NVIDIA has been moving this way for quite a long time, so it's not a huge surprise. But it's pretty exciting. Project Denver will integrate graphics processing with straight computational skills in a fully integrated CPU GPU hybrid package. So it makes perfect sense, like you say. NVIDIA also debuted the first super phone, the Optimus 2X with Tegra 2. This is a dual-core 1080p video-slinging console-quality game-playing 4G LTE device. But like many things at CES, we don't really know when or if this thing is going to come out.
The Tegra was surprisingly quick to market after they had announced it. I wouldn't be surprised if the Tegra 2, you know, they say we might see something in 2011. That wouldn't surprise me. I think, you know, the Tegra processor itself was sort of the first, you know, higher end system on a chip that really made some splashes, even if it was only in sort of the enthusiast market. I don't know, more excitement with the Tegra 2 for me, especially in this, you know, a super phone category. Are you kidding? Is that really what they're going with?
It can't be just a smartphone.
You don't like Superphone? Ayaz, what do you think of Superphone?
Well, so you got to have some kind of marketing jargon, right? I mean, how are you going to separate the smartphone and drive all the analysts crazy? Oh, is it a smartphone? Is it a feature phone? Is it a Superphone? I mean, this thing actually is kind of neat because Tegra 2 has been announced for a while. It's finally getting into something. When it's going to show up, I don't know. I did see some video on this thing, and it was running pretty well. I mean, video looked great on it. And just the UI on the actual, I think it was running Android, was pretty snappy.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead, Randall.
I've played with a Tegra, you know, way back in the day, and this was always the hope that, you know, you're going to have this HDMI out super device. Back in the day when I was working at CNET, it was called the APX2500, and they showed it off. And, you know, the idea of having both a smartphone and a sort of video playback phone where you plug it into your TV. I mean, the Tegra 2 looks to maybe better deliver on that promise than the original Tegra, but really it's a lot of it's up to the phone manufacturers.
I'm holding off for the bat phone. NVIDIA also made some announcements. GeForce GT500M family is now official. The GTX 485M was introduced as the fastest mobile GPU. That's good stuff. Everybody, it kind of pales in comparison to like, oh, and we're also going to, you know, compete in the CPU market and come up with super phones, but it's important stuff nonetheless. Microsoft had a press event. Now, later on tonight, after we record, Steve Ballmer will be opening up the show with the opening night keynote. It used to be done by Bill Gates. Last year, Steve Ballmer took over the duties. But they had a press event this afternoon and announced that Windows 8 will run on ARM. So when you talked about Windows 7 on ARM earlier, you could actually see a future where you've got Windows 8 running on an NVIDIA CPU.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's the exciting thing, right? To have, you know, TI OMAP as well as Tegra 2, as well as, you know, all these different chip architectures, it means more flexibility for these tablet manufacturers, right? We're not going to see necessarily complete iPad ripoffs. We might see, I don't know, that sort of weird laptop tablet category that never really worked out anyway. But maybe they'll bring some, I don't know, refreshed ideas to that. Microsoft. A keynoting CS has always been weird for me because they're not a consumer electronics company, but you know they could show off their latest, you know, not mice or more tablets.
What do you mean? They're obviously going to put Windows 8 on the Zune because now they can. This is perfect.
It's true.
I mean, can you imagine a Zune running a full copy of Windows 8?
Exactly.
Well, that's right. They're partnering with systems on chips, so they're partnering with Snapdragon, TIO Map, and Tegra 2. You saw that. Windows 8 on your Zune.
Exactly.
Or maybe Zune large, so like maybe a lot of Windows tablets coming up. Now it can run really easily on stock hardware, so that's kind of nice.
This Zune huge. I'm looking for the WinVidia acronym to be coined at some point. To replace Wintel. We're also looking at Windows TV possibly being the big news from the Ballmer keynote tonight. Take your bets. Ayaz, what do you think? Are we going to hear them announce a Google TV competitor?
Yes.
Absolutely. Randall, what do you think?
I think yes, and I hope it integrates with Xbox.
Yeah, because they can't just parade out a bunch of tablets again. They got to come up with something different. So I agree.
Exactly.
I think it's a good bet for that. Also, Paul Thurrott, our friend from Windows Weekly, announces on his blog over at WindowsPhoneSecrets.com the roadmap for Windows Phone 7 updates. The first update will be No Dough. We'll release to manufacturing in January. It stands for No Donuts. It won't ship until early February once the carriers sign off on it. It includes copy and paste, support for Qualcomm 7X30 smartphone chipset, CDMA location stack, etc. The major update will be Mango. This will add Internet Explorer 9 with the Trident 5 rendering engine. This is the 75XX code branch. Suggested it'll be called Windows Phone 7.5 at that point. It'll actually be a version update as well. So there you go. That's coming later in the year. Mango is not the next Windows Phone update after Nodo, though. It's part of a future major update, so that's why it doesn't have a date for it. But a little more.
It's healthier, right? They're doing Mango, not donuts. It's not the sweets. They're staying away from the sweets.
I think another trend that we might be seeing at CES are the Google TV competitors, the people trying to get into the set-top box space. We mentioned that Microsoft might be announcing one. LG announced one earlier. They're launching an app platform for TVs. Not only are you going to have apps developed specifically for LG TVs and an LG interface, but they're also coming up with something called the Smart TV Upgrader that allows you to get the LG App Store and the services like Netflix and Hulu Plus and the things you'd expect on any TV. So they're not, I think that's a smart move, right? They're not saying, well, we just want this built into the LG TVs and force everyone to buy LG.
Yeah, but is LG strong enough to command an app market itself? I mean, they can make a bunch of apps for themselves, and they can have Facebook integration, Twitter stuff. But I mean, how is that app market going to grow if it's just LG? I mean, have they announced any partners or anything like that?
Well, they're opening up to developers. They haven't announced partners, but they you know, they did show it off. And in the demonstration, they had Netflix, they had Hulu Plus, they had YouTube, they had MLB.TV. So I would assume that they would get all of the normal partners that you would see sign up for these sort of things. Netflix wants to be everywhere, so that's a safe bet.
Yeah. My hope would be that it wouldn't be a specific platform like, say, Google TV, but instead, you know, they just support a really robust HTML5 implementation. You know, as a developer, I don't want to build yet another platform. I mean, Boxy, Roku, LG, like how Google TV, Apple TV, like how many more platforms are there going to be, you know?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot more before we scale them down to the winner, right?
Yeah. And unfortunately, I mean, the wait for that winner, that's going to further delay, you know, set-top box revolution or whatever you want to call it. You know, content creators are going to kind of wait, I think. Netflix maybe will lead the way and be on every device, and then maybe it's up to consumers. I mean, I don't know how this is going to play out, but it upsets me that the fragmentation is so, you know, ridiculous.
LG also announced a LTE modem chip and module for Verizon. We're going to hear a whole lot more about LTE modems and phones, particularly from Verizon, tomorrow. They have a press conference at 8 a.m. Not related to CES, though. Google unleashed a video showing off Android 3.0. We're seeing a lot of tablets here that say they're going to have Android 3.0, but they don't have it yet because it's not available for them to install. But if you want to get a look at it, Android 3.0 Honeycomb, there is a video available, and Gadget's got it. Among other places. And I don't know if you guys have looked at this yet, but it's pretty sweet looking.
It reminds me a bit of the Chrome OS tablet thing they were showing off a while ago. I mean, there was this implementation of Chrome OS that looked like it was going to be for tablets. And then I saw the Honeycomb video. It looked very similar. It's like they took away some of those ideas. You have a full browser. You got full tabs. I mean, it looks really slick. And my favorite thing about this is they keep showing, they show this one clip of, I think, Google Talk. So you can do Google video chats right from the tablet, which kind of suggests that Honeycomb tablets should have front-facing cameras, at least if you want to do a chat.
Yeah, I think the major thing for me from the Honeycomb video is just that the interface looks unique, right? I think Android in the past has suffered from this somewhat of a Me Too syndrome when it comes to the iPhone. I mean, it's obvious that the initial interface was heavily influenced by the iPhone. But, you know, this Honeycomb update really does make me think that there's something unique here and that Google's pushing the space forward a little bit more than they have in the past.
Yeah, although that Gmail, they have the Gmail integrated for tablets that looks different than the Gmail on Android, and it really just looked like mail on an iPad to me.
Yeah, I mean, some of the things are going to have to be the same, right? Like the left sort of left inventory, right content view. And that's not going to change too much. But do some of the interface tweaks or the interface touches in the video at least look like they were unique? So.
All right, folks, I want to take a break to thank our sponsor this episode of Tech News Today and all of our coverage of CES 2011. You can hear it being built behind me. It's brought to you by Ford and voice-activated sync with MyForge Touch. You've heard us talk about sync. It's the way to respond to voice commands in your car. You jump in and you just talk. But there's also touch controls. You can get touch control panels, entertainment, climate control, navigation. It's true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, personalized traffic alerts and weather, a whole lot more. 911 assist. If the airbags go off, it automatically calls 911 for you. And MyFord Touch specifically includes an 8-inch touchscreen in the center stack, so a big old screen that you can look at and set your controls. 2 5-way switch pads on the steering wheel and 3 LCD screens. With Sync, MyFord Touch, you can switch between voice commands and touch commands on the fly. So if you're parked and you want to use the touch to play through a bunch of stuff, you can do that. Then once you're driving, switch it back to voice so you've got your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Stay connected. Available exclusively on Ford and Lincoln vehicles. We invite you to experience Sync with My Ford Touch this week at a Ford dealer near you. So stop on by. Say, hey, I want to take a look at that My Ford Touch, that Ford Sync, and view online demos for more at SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Thanks to Ford for supporting Tech News Today and our coverage of CES, the Consumer Electronics Show 2011. Another story that actually hasn't come out of CES today, though, Amazon readying their Android App Store opened up for developers now.
It seems like a really cool thing. I mean, like, the cool thing about Android is that you can have the Google app market, or you could have, I think there's a competitor that Angry Birds is on. And now with Amazon's, it's going to be kind of nice, because I was reading their little press release, and they, what they were talking about is their expertise on just basically online shopping. Because the problem with the Android marketplace is it's very hard to find anything. I mean, you think with Google it'd be very easy, but apparently very difficult to navigate that app market. But Amazon might actually have a much better alternative. Plus, I mean, they probably could get this on anything.
Yeah, I'm not super convinced on Amazon being able to, you know, really knock this out of the park. But I do think in some cases that the Android market fragmentation is good. I'm not sure it is with Amazon, but NVIDIA, we were talking about them earlier, they announced their own little app store just for high-end games. See, that to me makes a lot of sense. Tom, what do you think Amazon's whole market's going to be?
I think Amazon is perfect for this. I think that Amazon is exactly what Google needs. In fact, I think Google should just contract out for Amazon, because they know how to make it easy to shop. They know how to show you related apps. They know how to do search on the web. They know how to do all this stuff. And another interesting angle that they're doing here is they let the developer set a list price, but then Amazon decides how to best price the app based on its own marketing schemes. So the developer still takes home the 70% cut, but Amazon is dynamically changing prices on different apps depending on popularity trends. You've got Amazon saying, we're going to play with our 30% a little to try to tweak how this goes.
That makes a lot more sense to me. I mean, when I first heard this, I saw the developer portal and that was about it. But, you know, those extra details on, having things cross-linked and, you know, maybe people who also bought this app would buy this app. That might be a way that they could actually one-up Apple's store, because, you know, I can't find, unless you know the direct name of the thing you're searching for, or it's in the top 50, it's really hard to find, you know, new apps and discover new things.
And speaking of Apple's App Store, their Amazon will be approving everything that goes into the store. So expect some some problems over that when they decide to reject some app for some ridiculous reason, because it's going to happen. Just a minor note here, Kindle apps now available for Android and Windows tablets. I'm sorry, Kindle apps will be available for Android and Windows tablets later this year, and Kindle app for Windows Phone 7 available now. And it's coming for Android as well.
There you go.
So it's good news for the Android set. All right, you guys, you guys like putting on glasses when you watch your 3D TVs?
More than anything, Tom.
I didn't actually realize that Toshiba had already started selling glasses-free 3D TVs in Japan, but they have a 12 and a 20-inch version already out. They're showing off 56 and 65-inch versions of their prototypes of glasses-free TV. Our engineer, Ken Shepherdson, said he got to take a look at them, and there were three places you could sit. He said he could tell it was going to hurt his eyes if he watched it for very much longer, but it did work. It was in 3D. So I think it's way early for this sort of thing, but it's interesting that Toshiba says we're going to sell it by the end of our fiscal year. So that could be 2011 or early 2012.
That doesn't seem like a good idea. If there's only three spots you can watch it, and you can only watch it for a limited duration, I mean, this seems like it's too early for it. But then again, they're showing off prototypes, so maybe they'll be able to test it out. But I mean, again, you still have the content issue. I guess you don't have any more glasses, so that's a plus. But it shouldn't be painful to watch TV. I mean,
keep it in the research lab, keep it at CES, keep it at CEDIA, keep it at these places where they can show it to people, but do not sell these TVs. I didn't think glasses TVs were a good idea. I don't think, you know, if this is lenticular, which is what I'm guessing, I don't know anything about their tech, but to me, it seems like based on having it be in, you know, a couple specific spots, they're just doing some sort of lenticular, like, prism thing, and that's going to give you a headache if you're watching it, unless you're watching it on the exact angles. I mean, keep it in the labs, keep it at CES, but don't sell it to the public.
Toshiba also issued their own 3D warning, similar to Nintendo, saying that, you know, if you have children 6 years or younger, that you should probably not allow them to watch it. So the idea of getting a 56-inch TV for 3D and then saying, oh, send the kids out of the room, we're going to watch the Super Bowl now in 3D.
You can put your kid off angle, that's all. And he's fine. See, there you go. That's what it's for the safety of the children.
Yeah, that's not going to hurt his eyes.
You don't stand in one of the three spots, you're safe.
Now, I talked earlier this week on Tech News Today about Intel Sandy Bridge finally getting the official get-go. AMD has now followed up with the announcement of their first Fusion chips. These are chips that combined the ATI graphics chip with the AMD x86 chips in a Fusion hybrid CPU-GPU chip. That's the way of things these days. And they're claiming 10-plus hour battery life with DirectX 11 graphics.
Yeah, I think this takes the low end of the market pretty well. You know, AMD is known for sort of competing in that Core i3, Core i5 world. Core i7 users, of course, are definitely going to, you know, still get their performance out of the Intel pieces, but at least there's, you know, a lower end alternative. And when you look at things like tablets or, you know, smart books, which I don't think there are any of those anymore, but these like lower end devices that are battery conscious, keeping that graphics chip on the CPU is a good way to conserve battery and et cetera. I mean, yay for AMD kind of getting in the game.
And as we're already seeing some devices with these chips in them, the Lenovo X120e and the HP Pavilion DM1 have already announced they're going to use Fusion.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good thing. I mean, sometimes the technologies are announced and you hear about them, but then nobody actually picks them up. But the fact that HP, Toshiba, and Lenovo are going to have these in their laptops means, you know, this is actually probably pretty decent. I mean, from what I'm reading about it, it's going to handle, you know, a lot of your daily graphical needs, and it's going to be fine.
Yeah, well, no performance stuff, but, you know, not everything is a performance need.
Now, we are getting a ton of laptop announcements. You knew there were going to be a ton of tablet announcements, and there are. We'll be covering live at live.twit.tv Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You're going to see a lot of those tablets. So, but some interesting laptops that you may not be hearing as much about. Toshiba launches a satellite series that includes some 3D laptops that include a pair of active shutter 3D glasses. Again, 3D, you'd think they would have learned last year, but they're still pushing it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, on a laptop, it's actually not so bad if you think about it, because you are on one angle, right, with a 3D display. But it's on televisions where it breaks down.
Yeah, I mean, one person can put on glasses. That's not embarrassing to, like, hey, guys, come over and watch Avatar. Oh, wait, I only have two pairs of glasses, so I guess I can only have two friends. But, you know, I mean, still, I don't need 3D on my laptop. And I think this is, like, the business traveler who wants to impress his business traveling buddies. But, you know, whatever.
But he's also got the option of Fujitsu's Lifebooks, also promising 3D viewing and 3D recording, which is pretty interesting. You could do some 3D business video calls.
3D Skype, is that in the pipeline?
3D Skype, that's going to be the big thing in 2011. You heard it here first. It will. 3D Skype will be something, whether it's in 2011 or 2012. But I think in the next 2 years, that's going to be something people are pushing for. It'll be in beta or something like that. Also, Acer outs 3 AMD Fusion-powered laptops. So not just HP and Toshiba, but we also got some Acer laptops as well. What do you guys think of the Samsung 9 series? That's getting a lot of attraction because it's so slim. They claim it's slimmer than the MacBook Air. It looks like it's about the same as the MacBook Air. But it comes with i5 CPU, USB 3.0 integrated WiMAX, and a 1.5-watt subwoofer in this really thin form factor.
It's really
definitely
pretty.
Into the Samsung 9. I think it's one of those laptops that, you know, you look twice at, and there aren't many PC laptops that'll do that. You know, you have Dell's Adamo, which is now super cheap as well. You have HP has, I think it's one of their Envy line that is super attractive. At least, you know, for a long time, I said the reason why I would buy a Mac is because it's the best computer, just as far as construction and quality. Now to see someone like Samsung step up, give integrated WiMAX, integrated USB 3.0, things you won't find on a Mac, I mean, that definitely has some attraction for me. I'm not in the market for a laptop, but if I was, I definitely would check out the Samsung at least twice.
I like the 9?
I like it. I mean, I think it actually has something called an Ethernet port, which I'm a big fan of. It's a simple thing that I always like to have. I don't care if it's got an optical drive or not. Just give me an Ethernet port. And this has it. It's $1,600, and its styling is really nice. I mean, it's actually a really interesting thing that I'll probably install OS X on.
Now, what if I were to tell you, Iaz, that you could save... We'll actually tell you how to install OS X on Sandy Bridge later. But let's say you could save $1,000 of that $1,700 and get a sliding PC.
Oh, snap. It slides.
Oh, Samsung sliding PC 7 series announced, coming in March for $699. It's actually, this is a tablet masquerading as a laptop because you slide out a keyboard.
Yeah,
I would say that at the price, it's got to have a lousy processor. And from what I'm seeing, it's got the last gen processor. So it doesn't have any of the cool stuff that we're seeing that's coming out everywhere else. It's got the Oaktail Oak Trail, that is. And think this thing actually slides up like a slider phone, but the display itself can come up. So you can use it as a regular laptop if I've seen the photos right. It's a little weird, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Randall, go ahead. What do you think? I assume weird probably covered it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not against it. I just think, you know, I got to see it in person. I got to play with it. So Tom, when you play with it in person, I mean, you'll be my decider, I guess.
All right. I will keep an eye out for it. Lenovo's IdeaPad U1 hybrid tablet made a return. I loved it last year at CES. Didn't love it any less this year, although I would like it to come out. They changed the Linux distro on the little tablet part of it to Android. So now it's a keyboard laptop, and then you pull off the monitor, and the monitor becomes a tablet. This year, it runs Android. So it actually works a little better. It's a little slicker. And they say it's actually going to ship in China in Q1.
And it's supposed to come to the United States in June, which is actually theoretically awesome. But then again, they told me last year it was going to come out last year, so I'm not going to hold my breath on this one.
Yeah,
Vaporware Award for sure. I do dig the idea of having this dockable. I mean, it's just so pretty. Like, when you see it in person, it docks pretty. It looks really nice. But, you know, again, it's sort of that same thing with the Samsung one. If I wanted a tablet, I'd probably just buy a tablet. If I wanted laptop, I'd buy a laptop. I'm not sure that this really fits anyone's true needs.
I like the idea of having my laptop and then being able to pull off the screen instead of having to pick up an iPad separately. That's kind of cool. I could see it, maybe. Intel had their press conference today, but they've already unleashed all the details about Sandy Bridge. So really the most exciting thing was them using one of the Razer 6-axis controls to play Portal 2. We got new views of Portal 2.
Yeah, that was
from the Intel conference.
I was looking at the press conference. I was most excited about the Portal 2. I can't wait for this game. Oh, yeah, and Intel also partnered with someone to make a game controller or something.
So to take a look, if you find any, just do a search for the Intel CES 2011 press conference, and you'll put Portal 2 in there. You'll find the videos out there and get a sneak peek at that. All right, we got two news fuses for you today, so don't be confused. Our first one is our CES Los Fuses. We'll get to that in a second. First, I want to thank MailRoute.info for supporting Tech News Today. I use it to block spam. If you run your own web server, or even if you're just an individual user who says, you know what, I'm tired of spam, you change a little bit of the MX record, and then you send your email to MailRoute. MailRoute takes out the spam and sends it to you. It sounds ridiculously simple. It sounds like I'm giving you a bunch of hype, but I'm not. I've tried it. I take acedetect@sabrilliant.com, which I've had since 1996, and it was just covered in spam. It was useless. I signed up for MailRoute thinking, it might get rid of some of the spam. Got rid of all of it. I actually can use that email address again. So if you would like to try it out, get a free trial. Go to MailRoute.info. Try it out for free. And as a part of the Twit Army, you'll get a special price when you sign up, $2 per user per month for 10 users, or if you're a single user or a family user, $30 per user per year for single users. Visit MailRoute.info and try it out. Time now for the CES Los Fuses. General Motors is bringing their OnStar service to non-GM cars. OnStar will sell the 23-ounce mirror through Best Buy. Installation is going to run you $75 to $100. It'll come this spring, offering a range of services starting at $20 a month or $200 annually. GM says the mirror will work on 99% of the top 20 best-selling non-General Motors vehicles sold during the past decade. That would include cars like the Accord, the Altima, the Tacoma, those kind of cars. So you'll be able to put OnStar in any car you want.
You know, even though we've been bagging on 3D, you can get 3D movies. Vudu's streaming service is now offering 3D movies. The company's 3D content is currently available to select Samsung HDTVs and Blu-ray players. In the next few weeks, PlayStation 3 owners will get it. Devices from Vizio, LG, and others will get it in the next few months. The service will be made available to 3D-capable Blu-ray players from Mitsubishi and Toshiba, among others, as well as the Boxy Box by the end of 2011.
And speaking of Vizio, they just added to their earlier announcements Hulu Plus and Blockbuster On Demand. They're going to be in the Vizio App Store. And they'll begin rolling out to all VIA-ready TVs this week. Both apps will be headed to the Vizio 3D Blu-ray players with wireless apps, but they'll apparently have to wait a little bit longer as well. The apps platform will soon include MOG, OnLive, Namco Bandai, Skype, and Vimeo.
Novatel Wireless has a brand new MiFi for you with some WiMAX goodness inside for you Sprint users. It includes a display for tracking status of the device. Unlike Novatel's 3G MiFis, claims 4 hours of active use and 60 hours of standby, and can share storage from a micro SD card slot with connected devices. Should be out on Sprint February 27th for $50 with a 2-year contract.
I forget Sprint. Let's talk about AT&T. They mentioned today at CES that it's prepping to launch some 12 Android devices this year, presumably a mix of phones and tablets, including the first 4G phone, the HTC Inspire 4G, the Atrix 4G, which looks to be the rumored Olympus, and the Samsung Infuse 4G, which I think actually has a 4.5-inch screen, which is gigantic. 1080p HD playback, Super AMOLED Plus screen, and that Plus means better, or a 50% boost in sub-pixel count for you techie types.
Samsung also made some interesting announcements today, including the expected availability of the Samsung Player in the UK, but also a line of smart TVs. The most interesting feature, however, is likely the support for Bluetooth 3D glasses. Rather than relying on infrared, Bluetooth support Bluetooth promises to improve the line of sight, the range, and fix some of those interference issues. Other specifications across the line include 240 hertz D jitter technology, a 1080p panel, and built-in Wi-Fi support and Skype.
Cisco finally decided they want to get in on this whole streaming TV on the internet thing, so they unveiled VideoScape, a TV platform it said it will let service providers use to combine digital TV and online content with other communications applications, including social networking tools. So the VideoScape platform will include an IP set-top box and technology called the Cisco Conductor, which will be a little guy in a train outfit. Oh, wait, no, it's one. Which the company said links a cloud network to client devices of all types. So this is something they're going to sell to the cable companies to let you stream your TV to any device in your house. Interesting approach for that. All right, time now for the regular news fuse. Companies called... There we go. That's the stuff. Companies called Global Direct Parts and Smartphone Medic somehow got a hold of iPhone replacement parts and have posted an in-depth video that illustrates some tweaks to the iPhone 4. Most notable are antenna adjustments that could be an antenna fix or could be tweaks to allow the antennas to work on CDMA networks like Verizon's. Other tweaks included a SIM slot and the removal of the rear camera hole, which maybe is meant to be sold to enterprises that don't like cameras. Don't know.
That sounds very odd. Just in time for some hot $300 thin laptops with Sandy Bridge inside, the fine folks at Tony Mac X86 blog have posted instructions on how to run OS 10 on Sandy Bridge. It's not for dabblers or even people who like long-term reliability, but for you Hackintosh fans out there looking for a cheap alternative to the MacBook Air, it's a start.
And the first custom firmware for the Sony PS3 has been released, a coder known only as Kakaroto, there you go, claims that he has achieved the feat. The guy says that, or girl says that because of legal and copyright issues, he won't publicly release his own version of the firmware, but has provided all the tools needed to so that anyone with a bit of Linux savvy can create their own. It's all based on Sony's official firmware update.
I like that. Bloomberg Businessweek says Google's working on its own NFC-based mobile payment system. That's Near Field Communications, not National Football Conference. Businessweek says the system might launch as early as this year. It will be in competition with the ISIS system created by Verizon, T-Mobile, and AT&T.
Now, in November, Google sued the Department of Interior for purchasing cloud services from Microsoft, arguing that Google Apps platform was frozen out of the bidding. Today, a federal judge, Susan Braden, sided with Google by issuing a preliminary injunction preventing the department from deploying Microsoft's Business Productivity Online suite. Braden also found that Google had made a preliminary showing that the department had violated a 1984 regulation on competitiveness in government contracts.
Microsoft is also at odds with a researcher employed by Google who published a zero-day vulnerability in Internet Explorer on New Year's Day. The vulnerability was discovered using CrossFuzz, a browser fuzzing tool created by Google researcher Michael Zawiski, who says he gave Microsoft more than 6 months of warning before he disclosed the flaw to the public. Microsoft disagrees, however, arguing that Zawiski has now put thousands of IE users at risk.
All right. That's a lot of fuses to news on. Time for the calendar. Linux 2.6.37 released today. You think that they do it when CES isn't going on, you know, so they could get more hoopla. But new kernel. Very exciting.
Yay.
Motorola event this evening. I'm just going to give you a rundown of all the CES events between now and the next Tech News Today. Motorola event at 4 p.m. Pacific, actually starting right now as we're recording this. Sony CES event at 5 p.m. Microsoft's keynote, as we mentioned, Steve Ballmer at 6:30 p.m. All these times are Pacific. And then tomorrow morning, Verizon with their keynote at 8 a.m. Bunch of 4G phones, bunch of LTE stuff coming your way. And there's always that little kernel of wonder if they're going to do an iPhone announcement there. Mm-hmm. I think no. Leo's going to be there just in case. What do you think, Randall?
No way. It's not going to happen. I mean, maybe in 2 weeks we'll hear from Apple. There's no way. It is unthinkable that Apple would ever let Verizon announce anything cool.
No, especially on the same day that the Mac App Store opens. They're not going to do that. But finishing up our CES rundown. Oh, I'm sorry, IAS. I wanted to get your opinion, too. iPhone announcement, you see on the same page as me and Randall?
I think Randall's 100% right. Apple's not going to let Verizon do anything. If anything, Apple has its announcement, and then in February, Verizon has its own. But not
all
CES.
Right. Ford will unveil the Focus Electric at CES tomorrow at 11 a.m. And, of course, our coverage starts at 1 p.m. right here live from the South Hall. If you're coming to CES, come by and see us. You just come into the South Hall, go straight in. Is 1 o'clock not right? It'll be here at CES somewhere. Find us. But our booth is right here in the South Hall. If you're at CES, come by during the weekend. We'll be going live straight through. Actually, our live coverage starts tonight at Digital Experience at 7 p.m., hopefully, if all things go well. And we'll be giving you a look at some cool stuff from the Digital Experience press conference. And then we're on the show floor tomorrow, all over the show on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. If you want to feel like you're at CES, beat up your feet a bunch, you know, bind them and hit them, walk around a lot with your laptop and just watch our streaming. It'll be exactly like here. In fact, it'll be better than being here because we'll show you more than you could possibly see if you were trying to walk around this vast conference on your own.
And the cool stuff, right? You'll show them the cool stuff that you always, CES is so huge. I can't overstate how much stuff there is. So at least Tom will like filter some of that.
Also on the calendar, as I mentioned, Apple's setting to open the Mac Store, the Mac App Store tomorrow at noon Eastern. That's 9 a.m. Pacific, Thursday, January 6th. HP planning a webOS event for February 9th. AT&T to flip the switch on 4G's LTE network by mid-2011. So AT&T will be in the LTE game, sort of the last of the majors to the ballpark, although T-Mobile's really isn't 4G yet. And a Wi-Fi-only Samsung Galaxy Tab confirmed for the first quarter of the year here in the United States. So if you don't want to sign up for one of those carrier plans, there you go. All right, let's move on to our voicemail, and our first one has some thoughts on those newspaper racks, those digital newspaper racks that we were talking about yesterday.
Hey, TNT crew, this is Martin from Tampa, Florida. Regarding the whether or not people need a digital newsstand, I think the biggest evidence that we need a better digital publication distribution system is the fact that print magazines and newspapers are still around. There's a whole population of people out there who, you know, are still getting these things via paper, and, you know, a printed publication has a much thinner margin than a digital one. So I think these publications would really like to be able to get, you know, all these people who aren't consuming via the web or RSS yet to consume digitally, and they need to find a solution for that. All right, just my two cents. Thanks.
Hey, it's a good thought, actually. Obviously, they want that. My question is, will providing digital newsstands on tablets and desktops actually do that for you? What do you think, IS?
Well, I mean, I think it's really about how it's all presented, right? I mean, digital newsstands, or if you want to call it an app, you want to call it whatever. As long as it's easily findable and you can like just buy it with one click, like what Amazon does this, I think it'll be fine. Just otherwise, yeah.
All right, on to the emails to tnt@twit.tv. Matt from Neenah, Wisconsin says, on yesterday's podcast, someone mentioned appliances with built-in technology. That would be Iaz's boss, editor-in-chief of PC Mag, Lance Ulanoff. He was mentioning the LG washer and dryer that tells you when your clothes are done. And Matt says, isn't that what a buzzer is for? I get that we're trying to use the technology that we have discovered, developed, but aren't we trying a little bit too hard here? What do you think? Is this really a useful development? Randall, what do you think? Randall's not there.
Hey, wait, there I am. There we go.
Oh, there you are. Okay, yeah. Sorry, Randall, what do you think?
So I want everyone to know the contents of my laundry. I want everyone to know what's in my fridge. I want my appliances to tweet. I want, you know, share them on Facebook, do everything. No, but really, no, honestly, though, I do think the idea of having smart appliances, you know, you got to start somewhere. And if it starts with just sending you an email and your laundry's done, it leads to other good things, like actually, you know, knowing what's in your fridge, being able to order stuff for you before you need to get it. You know, doing things like efficiency of water. I mean, there's the whole Internet of Things to think about. You know, if there's anonymous data being collected, companies can, you know, make appliances they can know when they fail. There's a lot of advantages here. And, you know, maybe the cell phone text message buzzer is just the start.
I agree. We should all tell each other when we're doing our laundry and what kinds of laundry we're doing at all times.
Well, that's great. I mean, just if you think about it, you can send it to Google. You get a nice directed ad saying, hey, on your washer, would you like to buy some Tide? And here's a coupon, or get a Groupon or something silly like that. I think the buzzers,
perfect.
Come on, that's been done. Let's move ahead. Let's live in the future now.
Come on, future, man. Live in the future.
All right, we have just plowed through a bucket load of CES news today. I am impressed with both of your prowess to do this with me. Thank you so much. Randall Bennett, let folks know where they can find you on the internet.
So my day job is Castfire. It's a video platform. When I write about video, which is something I'm completely obsessed with, I do it at VidPlus+, and you can catch me on Twitter with the username Randall B. So any of those places, you can find me.
All right. I'll introduce you as being from VidPlus+ from
That's
now.
That's good.
I'll try to remember that. Yeah. As Aktar, PCMag.com. Let folks know where else they can find you on the internet.
Well, they can find me at IS.me or ThisOldNerd.com, where I still do a video show where I show you how to have the most tech-forward life there possibly can be, including washer and dryers that will tweet one day.
Hey.
But I definitely got to plug our CES coverage, CES.PCMag.com. We do have people out on the floor walking around on that horrible, horrible carpet, and they're busting their feet finding the coolest stuff. So definitely check it out, CES. PCMag.com.
There you go. You will not miss a beat of CES if you read PCMag.com and you watch our coverage. Sorry for the glare on the video version, but they're laying the carpet right now out there. They're working away. They're vacuuming. They're building. They're putting it all together. And live.twit.tv is the place to see everything important that happens at CES. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thanks again to Randall and IS. Thanks to Jammer B for operating things back at the home base. And we will see you tomorrow. twit.tv/TNT. TNT is the web address. TNT at twit.tv is the email address. And 260-TNT-SHOW is the voicemail. My brain's almost fried already. We just began. See you tomorrow.
Tom's gone. Hey, it's Brian.
What's exciting?